It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For 25 years, Alan Jones has been working with the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force. He's seen the days when the disease was essentially a death sentence to recent discoveries of preventative medicines and increased awareness. Alan Jones joins us now in studio to talk about how HIV/AIDS has impacted Pittsburgh, as well as his experiences from his career. Alan Jones, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Oh, thank you.
And you can join the conversation with a comment or a question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM on Twitter at ESSPGH. Alan Jones, I read that you told friends at a gay bar in 1982 that they'll never have to worry about news reports of gay cancer. Talk about that moment and what it meant or what you meant at the time.
Well, at that time, I'm going back to like 1981, 1982, there was a lot in the newspaper and on the television at the time about this new disease. And of course, they soon realized that it was affecting a lot of gay men. And of course, they called it the gay cancer initially before it was actually named. And I remember hearing about a lot in the news. And one of my friends said, you know, what do you think about what's going on? And I just couldn't imagine why there would be a disease that would only affect gay men. You know, at that time, we didn't realize how much it was extended into the general population, you know. And I just remember saying, oh, well, this is something we'll never have to worry about, because I was convinced that there had been some gay men that were someplace, kind of like the Legionnaires' disease. Mm-hmm. You know, some gay men had been exposed to something, and it was in this population.
Like, right. It could have been straight men. It just happened to be
gay men in New York City at the time.
Mm-hmm. So is this when you began to realize the magnitude of the epidemic? And was it shortly after that that you had the epiphany that a lot of people had?
That's so funny. For a couple of years, I was seeing the news, and then I began to put two and two together. And I think as a gay man, it was hard, too, because I finally felt that for the first time in, like, history, the gay people were being respected on some level than what it had been prior. You know, gay men were coming out, and women, in larger numbers. You know, gay pride had been, you know, starting back at Stonewall, you know, mm-hmm. things had changed a lot. And this was like
a setback. That was only about a little over 10 years prior to this.
Exactly. And I really felt like this was a setback. And it was really a lot of negativity around it in, you know, general society, just because it was a gay disease. And, you know, people made comments like they almost deserved it. So it was pretty kind of a negative feeling to have as a gay person. For me, you know, living in Pittsburgh, I wasn't really impacted by it. To a couple years later, I still had this moment. I had a neighbor who was a gay man. He only lived a few blocks from me. And every once in a while, I would see him out walking his dogs. Make a long story short, I was at a club in Pittsburgh, Pegasus downtown. I was actually on the dance floor with friends. And one of them said to me, did you hear such and such died? And I said, what do you mean he died? I said, I just talked to him. And he'd been hospitalized. He was dead like in his late 20s of pneumocystis pneumonia. And that was my wake-up call. I suddenly thought, oh, my God. This guy was my age, more or less, and he was gone already. And, so, you know, within a week.
So what made you decide to get involved in the fight against HIV/AIDS?
Well, I had been working at that time. I was working with deaf patients with psych problems at Bayview State Hospital. I had three different friends who found out they were HIV positive around 1990. And I had started volunteering at the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force. And I was
before you were hired.
Yes, I was working full time, but I just did this on the side as a what was called the Speakers Bureau, which is kind of a group of volunteers who would go around and try to make public awareness about this disease and what it meant. I also had a good friend who had a roommate who was dying of AIDS, and I just saw examples of how he was being, I thought, mistreated and disrespected. Like, he would go to the hospital because he was on medical assistance. They would leave him laying on the gurney for hours and because they didn't want to admit him just because of the cost. And they'd send him back home and he'd be back there. And his hands were raw. He would just itch himself.
He was sick and he needed help and he wasn't getting it.
He wasn't getting it. At least I didn't feel he was. And he wasn't. I have to just put it out there. So that's what kind of led me to go to the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force. So the following year, which will be 25 years tomorrow, I'd started. I was hired as a case manager. They actually finally had enough money to hire an extra caseworker.
In the early years, I read that you started an album of clippings of obituaries. Do you still have those?
Yes, I do. It's funny. I never consciously thought, oh, I want to say these. But I had some favorite clients. And, you know, I always say that in the 8 years that I was there, I'd lost over 160 of my own clients, and they were as young as 20 years old. And sometimes if there was a write-up in the paper about them, I would just cut it out and save it. And that, I realized at one point that I had a pile of these clippings, and I just put them under plastic just as a way of preserving them.
And why did you save them?
I think it's because a lot of my clients, some of them I followed as long as 2 years. A lot of them were young people, and I think I really connected with a lot of them. Kind of like the same way someone would save a senior yearbook. You know, for me, it was just some way of trying to keep their memories alive. So that's kind of the way I did it.
We're talking with Alan Jones, who for the past 25 years ago, tomorrow exactly, he started working for the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force. He's here to talk about his experiences with the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force, and also he's seen that arc of history from when AIDS was certainly a death sentence to today, when it still is devastating news when someone finds out, but not necessarily the death sentence that it once was. And you moved from casework to HIV testing. How difficult is it to let someone know that they are HIV positive?
Well, I actually did case management for 8 years. Then in 1999, at the end of the year, I started getting interested in prevention. And to be honest, I was really burnt out. Having lost all those clients during that time period, they always say you really should do that type of work more than 2 or 3 years. And I had done it for 8.5. And I just wanted to do something else. They encouraged me to go into the realm of prevention. And anyway, to answer your question, it was much more difficult 15 years ago only because a lot of treatment has come so far in the last 20 years. It isn't the death sentence it was, you know, like when I would tell someone in 2000 that they're HIV positive, it would wig them out terribly, as would me. People usually would cry, get really upset. I had a man, I still remember, he just got up and he started hitting his head and his hands against the wall just because that was his worst moment in his life.
And how do you react? What do you do?
It is hard, I have to say, especially for me. It's always hard telling younger people, someone who's like only 19 or 20. Even today, I still have my moments. I remember one in particular. It was a young man, and he had the opportunity to go to Japan on a dance scholarship program. And all of a sudden, to hear this news when he was 19 or 20.
In the prime of his life.
Yes. And I remember being in the car later and actually tearing up just because I couldn't imagine myself being told at such a young age, especially at that time when it was such a devastating disease.
So what have been the biggest changes over the 25 years for you?
I would say two things that always come to mind. One was the stigma around it. When I started, I had clients. I remember one client, he happened to be a heterosexual male. And I realized that he would have traded anything in the world to be dying of another disease. The fact that people might think bad of him or think that he was gay, a fag, whatever, I still remember him using that term, seemed to be worse than the fact that he was actually dying. And I think he would have chosen anything to have died other than HIV.
How did that make you feel?
Well, as a gay person, well, it's interesting you say that. I remember a woman call me one time, or some who was gay, was dying of AIDS. And I was getting companions, you know, like nurses aides to come in to see him. And I remember she said to me, "Alan, the only thing I ask is whoever you send into the house, please make sure that you're not gay." Which struck me even more so, the fact that her son was a gay hairdresser. You know, it was so out there. And I think he would have found comfort in finding people. So just as a gay person, kind of like the way a black person might react if they asked that a black nurse's aide not be used because of their skin color. So that's kind of, it was just an awful moment. I had to work around it because my goal was to take care of him, regardless of what the circumstances were.
This is 25 years of really challenging work, difficult, emotionally taxing and draining circumstances. And it's rare for anybody to work at a social service organization for 25 years. But in the role that you've been in, where you've witnessed so many of your clients passing away and going through the situations that you've described, why have you stayed with this?
That's funny you say that. Back in 1999, after doing casework for 8 years, I really became burnout. I have to say, I remember one time a woman was crying to me on the phone, a client, And I was trying to get my paperwork done, and I suddenly realized I wasn't hearing her. You know what I mean? I think I was really burnt out. And by the way, I was going for therapy for a couple of years.
You needed therapy yourself.
Yes, I was going for, because of the death and dying and the stress of it.
Sure.
And I thought I really need to do something else. And I have to say, because of the new meds, and we'll talk about that, you know, soon here, but it really changed the face of AIDS and how people were living and dying. And it just made me realize that I just needed to do something else. And actually, when I started going into prevention and doing more education, it was like a career change, even though I was still at the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force.
And so what do you think the future holds? You talked about new meds. What is being discovered? What has yet to be discovered? What are your thoughts about the future that faces those of us, well, all of our society, dealing with the HIV/AIDS issue? And how long do you see yourself staying with what you're doing?
Well, the meds that came out, you know, they oftentimes called them the cocktails. Around 1995, 96, they just were able for the first time to get HIV meds that were actually working on most people, that were keeping people fairly healthy so that people weren't dying of things like pneumocystis pneumonia. So all of a sudden, it was interesting. The death rates among our clients started dropping significantly after about a year or two. At first, they didn't change a whole lot, and I think it's because for a lot of people, it was too little, too late. But as people now are living with this disease, it's becoming a manageable chronic illness. Some people do very well with the meds, some people don't. But I would say with the type of treatment that's been available, and it seems with each year it gets better and better, the face of AIDS, the face of dealing with HIV has changed tremendously.
And today we're just seeing so much more acceptance of gay people, LGBT people in our society. Has that helped with just how people who have HIV/AIDS are able to deal with it? Because society seems to be much more compassionate, and particularly as we see so many more millennials coming of age. They have a different view of this than the generations in the past.
Exactly. I would say younger people, you know, people have seen films like Philadelphia, Longtime Companion. These films really picture the HIV virus as it was in the 80s. And I think that nowadays people have a much different look on it. People don't. I remember, for instance, when I was a young guy, when I would see people who were living with HIV, they oftentimes had the look, the wasting syndrome, sunken cheeks. There were things. I can remember actually being out at bars or in social settings and people making comments like, I think he's probably has it.
No.
Yeah, and usually you were right. And that really has changed tremendously, too. I think you asked me about the changes I've seen. The meds have really changed how people are living with it. And I think just the stigma around HIV. When I started, I remember there were clients whose families wouldn't enter their apartments. They would leave food in the front. One thing that always sticks in my mind, I had a single mother, single parent. She was taking care of a son who was now back home living in the Pittsburgh area. And he was dying of AIDS. At this point, he was in the hospital bed. And I was doing my first home visit. And I still remember his mother said to me, she said, Alan, does your car, when you come to visit, does it say Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force on it? And I said, no, actually, I use my own car. You know, they reimbursed me for mileage. I said, but it's not a company car. And she said, oh, thank God. She said, just yesterday, my boss asked me if my son had AIDS, and she said, of course, I lied and said he didn't. And he said, well, it's a good thing, because if he did, you'd be out of the job. She worked at food preparation, and the irony of it is she actually rented her living, her home, from her boss. So there was really no way of getting, I don't know how she kept it a secret or if he figured it out, because her son lived almost a year before he died.
Alan Jones has been working for the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force for the past 25 years, joined us in studio. Alan, congratulations on your quarter century with the Pittsburgh AIDS Task Force, and thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
Coming up, celebrating 60 years of Mad Libs. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.